Okay, good morning. Again, I'm Paul Helfrich, and I want to start out today by mentioning that John Klimo, who helped me with this work, is not here, obviously, and will not be speaking today. So I want to dedicate this talk to him, and also Rob Butts, who passed away on Memorial Day, who is a very important person in our spiritual lineage. All good operas and Broadway shows start with an overture, so this presentation is a very short one, outlining what we're going to be talking about for the next 45 minutes or so. So I want to tell you a little bit about myself, which will give you a hint of my own psychograph, to give you a sense of where I'm coming from, what altitudes. I have a multidisciplinary background. My formal academic training is in music composition. I'm a classically trained composer, can conduct the orchestra, orchestrate, do all of that. I, however, have not been doing that professionally for over 20 years. That led me in Philadelphia to my next major career path, which was to the Science Museum. You notice a pattern here, art and science emerging, where I did major exhibits, traveling exhibits, permanent exhibits, and a national testbed program called the Science Learning Network that you'll hear about a little bit later. However, as much fun as that was, the Science Museum ran its course. And just to explain that, my mother sent me an article. It was the Franklin Institute, right? It's mentioned there. From the July 28th Philadelphia Inquirer. It's called The Dumbing Down of Science. I'm just going to read you some bits of this article. Earlier this year, one of Philadelphia's illustrious cultural institutions underwent cosmetic surgery and had its name reduced. Our largest science institution simply became the Franklin, as if it were some glistening condo development or waterfront casino, which is fitting given all the size, sizzle, pyrotechnics, and costs. Some more about that. There's an exhibit called Pirates, the latest of the Franklin's succession of tantalizing blockbusters, following Body Worlds, now at the Trump Taj Mahal, and shows on the Titanic, Star Wars, and King Tut, the equivalent of a casino floor show, there to draw in folks who might find science sort of yucky. What Pirates doesn't teach is science. Instead, it dumbs down learning to a theme park level. The show ends, as these things always do, with a gift shop featuring a dazzling array of overpriced junk, swords, stuffed pirate cup, and skull and crossbones, sunglasses. Frequently, the Franklin seems as scared of learning as it does of science. Lopping off the Institute is an indication. What I watched was kids dashing madly, going from one pit stop to another. That's not all that bad, we call that. And there was so much insistent fun, and no, this isn't really science stuff, that the place is transformed into just another consumer palace.
Yeah, I'm from the Jersey Shore, and I took a school trip every year to the Franklin Institute.
Were you there in the late 1980s?
That's sad. I was there in the early 1980s.
Okay, great. So that led to my third career path, which we'll just generally call integral spirituality. And I didn't know about the quadrants at the time I was doing that. And I've been working with a small group of people in a company called New World View. And we're based on channeled information, the channeling phenomenon. So, of course, when I discovered Ken Wilber's work, that was a major breakthrough in understanding the channeling phenomenon. I was also part of the first cohort at Fielding for the Integral Certificate Program from 2006 until last year. So the paper that I'm going through today was my final paper for that program. And Randy Martin oversaw that, and Sean Hargan's work with us do this. So that's what I'm going to be going through today. So, generally speaking, Aqua 5, the fifth iteration of Wilber's meta-theory, consists of four major parts. The integral operating system, which will be infused in the talk today. Integral post-metaphysics, we won't have time to talk about. Integral methodological pluralism, which we will talk about specifically. And then integral life practice. Within this framework, I hypothesized that channeling functions as one of multiple intelligences for Howard Gardner and developmental lines for Wilbur. As such, channeling may be a universal human intelligence that develops through state stages and or structure stages. So this is my beginning outline. Also, it may be just more than a talent line, since it deals with complex relationships between brain function, between multiple intelligences, subpersonalities, dissociative states, amnesia, and get this, this is a mouthful. Concentrate on this. Gross, subtle, and causal bodies, gross, subtle, causal states, gross, subtle, causal lines. A big area that is outlined. So I also outline a pilot research program based on my professional experience at the museum. Now, just to ballpark, how many of you are familiar with the channeling phenomenon? So I don't have to prove or outline this, but generally with this slide, there's some quotes from transpersonal psychologists and anthropologists showing the history that there's written evidence that goes back at least 3,500 years of these different things with us. I will read the Huxley quote, though, because it's so wonderful. It just outlines the need for taking a balanced, comprehensive, inclusive approach to really anything that we do. He says, science is not enough, religion is not enough, art is not enough, politics and economics are not enough, nor is love, nor is duty, nor is action, however disinterested, nor however sublime is contemplation. Nothing short of everything will really do. That's from a book called The Island. It's a fictional piece from the 60s. So, of course, we get Ken's work and what I call Aqual 5. The second paper that I did in my integral certificate, I studied the five phases and outlined it. Sean only let us do 20 pages, but it's now a 60, 70-page paper. It's available for free on a CD in the back of the room afterwards. It's on my website. It's on the Frank Visser website, so it's circulated out there. But please feel free to take a copy with you. And generally, then, Aqual 5, in summary, I call it Spectrum 1, 2, and 3, and then Aqual 4 and Aqual 5 sort of outline Ken's major stages. So we're looking at an Aqual 5 approach, which teaches us to take a stratified lens of second-tier perspective. So as we approach any project that we're going to look at, and I've seen this in every research talk that I attended, the stratified view of things and how to start dealing with that. So with channeling, start with an amber definition, speaking in tongues, demonic spirit possession from the Christian traditions. And what blew me away was discovering the mind treasure tradition of the Buddhists, which is a very authentic and legitimate amber expression, I believe, of channeling. But of course, that is up for research. With orange, unfortunately, there's a single ego. Anything that dissociates the ego or displaces it or multiplies it, fragments it, is considered pathology. But orange is also the level where we get the move from good and evil into health and pathology. With green, we start to get an understanding of the more conventional channeling that you see in New Age communities and circles today. Madame Blavatsky, Jane Roberts, and Seth, which is the material I am very interested in, I've been working with for 30 years. The teal, then, really is just the first worldview level to be able to look at the previous three and understand them and work with skillful means in them. And I really believe that the work is in the first tier area, because that's where, 70 to 80% of the population and the power and the money and so on and so forth is. So it's really important. We'll get to questions. Hopefully I'll answer some of them as I go through them. And turquoise is in what I'm calling an enhanced stratified definition. And this is with the gross, subtle, causal body, state, and line interaction, the modeling that we're able to do with that. So these stratified definitions are really a key thing moving forward to studying this. omitted is that there will be some interludes peppered throughout the talk to sort of adjust the modality and give your awareness some time and space to kind of assimilate and sort of detach from the linguistic sort of peppering that we've been going through for the last 48 hours. Okay. If we're going to do any research on channeling, it's going to be, we're going to use as our foundation John Klimo's taxonomy. He wrote a wonderful book, 450-some pages, that was published in the late 80s and revised in the 90s. And that's pretty much the state of the art today because there's been very little research on this. So I'm just going to go through some of these things, the general overview of the different of the frame, the spectrum, we'll just call that, types of channeling, conscious, unconscious, full trance, possession. I wanted to put that in quotes because I don't believe in possession, and yet there is a fragmentation that does happen in the psyche sometimes when it's on the pathological side. I believe that's where our demonic tradition certainly can be traced. But that's not supported by research. That's an intuition on my part. Automism is an interesting variation because that includes automatic writing, Ouija board, pendulum, and other kinesthetic line. So John includes Gertrude Schmeidler's a typing system for psychic ability, so we'll want to include that as we go forward. Different sources, he points out, the discarnate spirits of deceased human beings is the largest category. People like Sylvia Brown, John Edward, James Van Praagh have made careers out of connecting with those energetic things. Is that channeling? I don't know. That's what I'm proposing a study to do to find out or to ballpark. Advanced human beings, highly evolved spirit teachers, and then non-humans, which we use all sorts of words to describe. I did put aliens in quotes because I have some very strong intuitions about the alien phenomenon, what it is and what it isn't. So there's types of channel content, and these make sense as you go through them, personal messages and guidance, detailed descriptions of an afterlife, artistic material. It's a very fascinating area. Luis Gasparato, I believe he's in Brazil, uses his feet, both feet and both hands. This is an extreme example. He sometimes just uses one or the other to channel artists from the past. And that's a fascinating part of the phenomenon, the field in general. Healing and medical material, Edgar Cayce, and scientific and technical information. So there's you have to start with a hypothesis, and my beginning hypothesis is that it's a spectrum of dissociative states that develops over time in discrete stages, similar to the multiple intelligences as defined by Howard Gardner and developmental lines or streams defined by Wilbur. In its mild form, the dissociative state is more like an enhanced creativity. We all channel in this definition to varying degrees. In its more extreme form on the spectrum, it includes fully formed secondary proximate selves, this is Wilbur's term, that offer knowledge well beyond the capacity of the primary proximate self. So that's an interesting when the secondary self's cognitive line is, you know, up in supermind or somewhere in that indigo and violet spectrum. And finally, accessing and maintaining that state at will, engaging and disengaging at will is a sign of a mature version of this. We also have to include a definition of health and pathology. So anyone who willfully engages dissociative states can be considered healthy as long as they access and in the state of will and show no signs of prolonged physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, kind of going up the stages, dysfunction in culturally appropriate ways. You have to leave that wide open because someone acting out crazy in an indigenous tribe would be considered crazy in Manhattan doing the same thing.
How do you define prolonged?
We can talk about that. A week, a month, a year? How long can a pathological situation exist? Is it temporary? It's open. Yeah, the wording is important. It's a good question. And the bottom line is that the use of dissociative states for personal healing is something we consider healthy. So someone can be in big trouble and having what Stan Grof calls a spiritual emergency and yet still be considered healthy when they get through it, when they reintegrate, when things come out and heal and they can function again. So this is a big area. The American Psychiatric Association has four definitions of dissociative disorders. The most popular one is DID, the third one there. And then the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation lists five. So these are just things we want to include in our framework for dissociative disorders and be aware of that research and include that as we're filtering through the results that we get. Within the AQUA framework, it tells us why we're better at some things and not so good at other things simultaneously. I think that's a really kind of cool conclusion that Wilbur has reached as he's taken all that research in. The other thing that Ken talks about a lot repeatedly is Kohlberg's finding that 25% is on one level, 50% the next, and 25% the next highest. It's not 100% or even 90% in one stage altitude alone. So we consider the center of gravity, what's called the center of gravity, is that 50%, okay? But we're simultaneously engaging the preceding and emerging parts of this thing. And this is still open to further research, but this is something that Ken uses as a baseline, so I'm including it because it's something we have to constructively debate as we go forward. How does that work with lines? He has this thing that he calls the ladder climber in view. And these are transitional structures, which means, for example, in moral stage one, when you move to moral stage two, you're not acting from both. You're acting from moral stage two, so it's a transitional structure. Each altitude step or level is a probability wave where we will find certain behavior, certain brain function, certain lower left, certain lower right correlates, all tetrameshed together. And there's three kinds of lines that can, he's divided these into three kinds. The cognitive line, necessary but not sufficient. Self-related lines, morals, self-identity, and needs, and then the capacities or talent lines. And I would include channeling as a talent line for starters. It may move somewhere else in time, you never know. There are over 30 different lines listed in various Wilbur sources. It's not an exhaustive, but it's a thorough view of the AQUA 4 and 5 material, and there's 30 lines that he's listed. Remember, our self-related lines is one of three, one of the three kinds, okay? So he models this in the following way. Now we're getting into that psychic, subtle, causal business. Okay, so we have the altitudes, which he has changed, by the way. This here, subtle, causal, is now replaced by a color scheme because he admits he took state names and plug them in. And so with AQUA 5, we're no longer using those, but I included this because it's from integral psychology and AQUA 4 work. The non-dual is not really a line, but it's the grounding goal of all lines. And this primordial paradox of spirit as grounding goal is really sort of the essence, I think, of that Wilbur brings to AQUA. And it's something no other theorist has even attempted to contend and integrate. 30 lines, therefore, only reference the frontal self, the ego, the waking self. There's precious little research on soul and self lines, and Ken has stated more careful research needs to be done, and I hope this is okay. I'm outlining a way to do some of that. So with AQUA 4 and 5, I believe we can do that. I also just wanted to hyperlink at this point and just mention the importance. You can see where we've gone this far in my talk. of an integral life practice. It's mandatory, in my view, that you're doing a standard practice of some kind to push into that 25% turquoise. I admit I'm lucky on a good day if I got that 25% turquoise lighting up and understanding and able to do this. But then I know I come back down into my teal zone, so to speak. But this is where we want to get, and I believe that channeling will be legitimized scientifically only at the turquoise altitude. Again, this is speculation, but I believe that's where we're headed. So if we take this chart from Integral Psychology, page 125 of the edition I have, the circle shows that perhaps the dreaming self, which I would include here, the causal self, they're all nested in our awareness right now. These are things we're teasing out. We're trying to give them labels and it. Ken has included them in the upper right. We have a gross subtle causal body. Of course, we have interiors to all of those, and then a whole lower left, lower right going on. But what I think might be happening is that there is some sort of bleed through from these lines. And notice also, you know, the frontal is solid. So we start out as a zygote or prenatal, perinatal, and we're born here. But then there is a sort of overlap between these two. And that this can then take over, according to Ken, that this deeper psychic is now our stage, our stable stage. And also then there's some overlap here with this causal state based on Ken's research and experience. So we want to include that and have that in the model. So now we have a new hypothesis based on everything we've gone through. The channeling is an intelligence which may include fully formed secondary proximate cells that allow soul and self lines to merge and be expressed through the frontal proximate self line via stage structures and to some extent stage structures. That's a mouthful, but if you're following me, that's the core of what I think Aqua 5 allows us to model here. As such, then, there are brain modules we should be able to identify, and there are lower left cultural value systems and social systems that facilitate and support that. Now we have to go to Gardner's work briefly and look at that. I'm just going to run through this pretty fast. He's a multidisciplinary guy, so really, green researchers tend to be multidisciplinary. Anyway, they're already bleeding through and including wearing multiple hats. He defined intelligence as a biopsychological potential to process information that can be activated in a cultural setting to solve problems or create products that are of value in a culture. It's a four-quadrant definition, and I added those brackets just to point that out. His cognitive lineage based their modeling on modules, and it's the different brain stems. You're familiar with Paul McLean's triune brain, which I know they've moved beyond, but it says the reptilian brain stem, then the limbic system, the emotional system, and then the cortex. There's three systems involved in this. And so the modularity is how they've done their research. Gardner had eight criteria, and I'll just kind of go through them pretty fast here, based on his view that he looked at to identify the first set of intelligences that he came up with. And this last point that just came up, the existence of savants, I want to point out, this is a cool exception to the necessary but not sufficiency of the cognitive line in anchoring all those other self-related and talent lines. The cognitive line of a savant may be that of a six-year-old, but their musical line, their linguistic line, etc., may be up there at a post-conventional level. And that's, how does that happen? We don't know, but we have to include that. And then the final two pieces, psychometric findings, can they put a square peg in a round hole and know the difference, and so on and so forth. So in Howard's first book, he's one of the first well-known researchers to this. There are others, obviously, with 30 lines out there these days. But he's the guy that framed it as a multiple. And these were his seven. We did a brain exhibit in 1991-92 at the Franklin, a traveling exhibit. And we used this theory, as educators did at that time, to start to modularly teach kids science, the science of different things, and in this case, the brain. Then in his last book on this, he adds four more. He has a moral, he has a spiritual, which is interesting. Those things are getting bigger, a naturalist, the exterior world, the it world, existential, the I world, the spiritual world. Well, I think that's everything. my hat saying that I did write all of this music, by the way. It's on a CD called Mindscapes. It's available on my website if you're interested in it. It's fun to include that in my talks.
Who did the art?
That's an artist named Yerk, and he's just a surrealist painter that I'm always looking for imagery on the internet. It goes in my cosmic image file, so I just have lots of those. I just pick them out as intuition guides me. Okay, now we're going to apply Aqua 5 in 10 minutes to everything we've talked about thus far. Wilbur's lines, Gardner's multiple intelligences. I want to point out the deficiencies of Gardner's approach, the incompleteness, the partiality of it. He tends towards subtle reductionism, as most cognitive schools do. They emphasize the right-hand quadrants. Interiority is just not that important. He also talks about the amoral nature of intelligences, and I have to call this point out because with Wilbur's BMI, the basic moral intuition that he outlined in a long footnote in SES, shows us that there are stages of moral development unfolding. And Gardner uses an example of Goebbels and Goethe using language, but yet the language is neutral. We know the letters are neutral on the stages, but the meaning given to it in an aqual sense by the perpetrators of the language and the recipients and perceivers of the language comes from an altitude. In Goebbels' case, it was an amber, at best, ethnocentric level, and with Goethe, this was an orange world-centric level. So these are different, and there are moral connections to everything that we do. And Aqual allows us to say that. I believe it. Thomas Kuhn's famous book, The Nature of Scientific Revolutions, points out that as scientists, we're looking for anomalies. That's where you want to start a career, find an anomaly, get it funded, and you're off and running, right, for 40 years and 30 books later. Well, channeling is an opportunity. And it's an anomaly not explainable by MI theory, as refined as Gardner has it. So we want to employ Ken's Aqua 5 framework to better situate the true but partial nature. And this is the beautiful thing about Aqua 5 as you get into that turquoise nature of it. So this is the program that I outlined. The paradox we face, though, is, and this was something we faced as students in the program, you have a final paper to write, pick a research project and apply this theory to it. Well, no, who's done it? What research can I show that it's done? It's a catch-22. So you have to start somewhere. So we take an integrally informed approach to an all-quadrant methodologies that we have experience in, which may be considerable or may not be that much. We have to seek outside help via collaboration with advisors and experts in the complementary quadrants that we're weak in, and we fit all that into budget considerations. That's the business of research. For phase one, what I learned to emphasize, and this was feedback from my classmates, and one was a medical doctor. When we started this project, and I put channeling up there, what is the immediate knee-jerk reaction to channeling? New age woo-woo, purple, amber, crap, right? It's just all pre-modern mythic nonsense.
Trying to make a lot of money.
Yeah. And so what I was able to show, as I've shown you hopefully thus far, is that we need to emphasize the upper right to get funding. That was the point the good doctor pointed out to me. And having done the brain research and worked with the National Institutes of Mental Health, National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health and Mental Health, that would be a place to go. Whether they would fund this proposal, I don't know. But it's designed in a way, and this is in the paper itself, to change the language to the appropriate funding source. So perhaps if we can get started with just the upper right, perhaps that's something that we do for practical terms. And that's something we're going to see in the next decade in this community going forward with IMP, I believe. The secondary emphasis then would be on the ethnographic studies to show the genealogy, history, and other elements. These three points are important: inclusion, enactment, and enfoldment. They're the three heuristic principles that guide IMP. So we want to include everything. Everything's on the table, and we've got to be able to identify the altitudes that they're coming from. Enacting is doing, creating, forming, perceiving, constructing, and enfolding is working its way up and down the spiral, the stages. So Klimo's research agenda from 1988 that he sent to me and we discussed is really the point of departure for this project. No work has been done in that time. He emphasized quadrants, states, and types, so that means we want to augment John's work with the structuralist, constructivist approach that includes levels and lines, and to emphasize that. And this helps us reduce the pre-trans error, fallacy errors, and reduce category errors made by the wrong eye of knowing. This is something not heard much discussion about this weekend, but the eye of flesh, the eye of mind, the eye of spirit, how those modalities, epistemologies are working together are the beautiful part of Aqual 5. And learning to integrate that is hugely important, and it reduces category errors. And of course, Ken is big on this in his last theoretical book, Integral Spirituality. It's a whole appendix on the myth of the given, and he was hammering that in our class in 2006 and 2007, which simply the myth of the given is saying there's a pre-existing world out there separate from me. And the postmodernists have shown that I co-construct, I co-create, we co-create, I construct, I create. So we're refuting the myth of the given. We're creating this as we're going. So option one is the big one. So since I was a part of a $6 million project, I just rounded it off to five and proposed a five-year longitudinal study for 50 subjects, 25 channelers, which have to get interviewed and accepted and authenticated, which we have to come up with metrics for, and then normal, whatever that is, since everybody channels. And that's something I would work out. I don't have, see, the beautiful thing is I don't have the know-how to do that, but I'm going to find people because I can dangle and subcontract a subcontract in front of them and manage them to do just that and to provide that piece for me as long as I can manage that. And, oh, let me get back to that previous point. In the paper is a straw man called the Integral Education Network. Because of my background, it was a no-brainer that we need some sort of governing body, like the National Institutes of Standards and Technology in Washington, that tells us how wide stop signs are and car lanes and how thick the yellow lines are. All that's standardized. And now Sean created the Integral Research Center. It's fledgling. It's starting out. This is exactly what we need. And what it does is provide a whole lot of options for us. The other thing then that I would do from this big collaborative testbed perspective is to form my own research collaborative, the same way we did it at the Franklin, with multiple sources and having them meet regularly, but whether they understand each other is not as important as long as I do, as long as I can navigate between those things and organize that. If major scholars are not available, we seek out the Howard Gardners. The odds of them participating are slim. As I'm finding out. So we want to solicit their senior students. And actually, that's a better strategy, I propose, because they're younger and they have a trajectory ahead of them. And if we can infect them, I'll put that in quotes, with Aqual 5 and get as they go over this five-year period and start to see how it is working, they will then take it and apply it in their own way, as they see. So soliciting senior students is another thing we want to do and get them from the lineages that they come from. And the key is an integral czar. That's a nice orange term, right? A drug czar, the war czar. So we need an integral czar to manage the process, and I know that I have the background to do just that. So at a minimum, from a methodological standpoint then, we want to try and cover all four quadrants. If circumstances don't allow us to do that, we pull back and we emphasize different parts, which upper left and upper right, I think, for minimum to make any sense out of this. And of course, adding the lower left and lower right. So these are just the actual specifics. And the actual methods, as we're learning, there are hundreds of them out there. Okay, so this is just the ballpark. This, my paper is just orienting generalizations to ballpark things. Sean Hargens presented his ecological outline of his book yesterday, and he accumulated over 200 methods and posted them in the eight zones, and the cool thing was that they actually filled all eight zones. And just this morning it hit me, they were laying in bed, that the collective is already doing this. But what there seems to be is a motion for individuals emerging from the collective who can take on all of these perspectives simultaneously and manage effectively with skillful means within them. That's a mouthful, that's a big thing, but I think that's the next 20 to 30 years of this community and its potential for research and successful research. Okay, this is more specifics, which I won't bore you with, but you have to dig down. What are we actually going to do? What instruments are we going to use? How are we going to implement? How are we going to start gathering data in the databases? And so on. actually the most important part to really dig into this stuff, but I won't bore you with it because it's very specific. Well, the Zone 6 I'll talk about because they're cool. The brain imaging techniques, the outside of an outside, looking at the brain itself light up. And those are expensive. If any of you have ever had an MRI, you know that it's not cheap. So to get a database of that going. Also, measuring galvanic skin response, blood pressure, heart rate. Stanley Krippner and group did a study on J.Z. Knight, who channels RAMPHA, and used these methods on her to reach their conclusions. Integral Aqua 5 project of this scope is to test the model itself. Part of the conclusions we want to report are on the model itself to refine the model itself. Within that context, these are the relationships that I'm proposing we explore. And I won't go through that because that takes some concentration and we're running out of time to get through these specific points. But it's all there in the paper if you want to dig into that. I believe that it's important, you know, this is how you sell this to funders. You have to, what benefit is the community getting and what will people get out of this? And you have to have a very good reason for them to give you their money. You have to deliver something important and you have to be close to it. And that's the biggest challenge I think we face as fundraisers for integral research. Psychotherapeutic applications would be very important. We can show that and people can be trained. Okay, phase two. I do outline a phase two because you're always, you know, these things always expand and you just get deeper and deeper and take it to different levels. But the practical applications are in human potentials, problem solving, creativity, invention, artistic expression, personal transformation, and meaning making. Why are we here? Where are we going? Psychotherapy and private practice, small business, integral life coaching. Channelers are actually making a living this day. These days, and they're doing just this. The challenges we face, funding sources, I've mentioned that. The politics of paradigm wars in academia and the commercial sector is something to be navigated through. And as Rob Smith mentioned last night, you don't want to take orange money, so to speak, that just is a sponsor. It's just not going to work. It's best to leave that alone. It's best to look for greener sources of funding that are open to these possibilities. Meaning you don't want to have a Coke thing sponsorship on your, you know, just it's not the time for that to sell out at that level. The Aqua model cannot be imposed on others, right? We can't make them think turquoise, right? You can't make green researchers or even teal researchers fully operate at turquoise. So you have to, again, learn to work within first and second tier limitations and strengths. We need a viable integral research center. It's in its infancy as an advisory capacity, a repository of best practices where we can go and find exemplar success models. Hopefully we'll be housed there and establish, and yes, enforce standards, some sort of standards that come out to do that. Prioritize and allocate funding. Integral theory needs constructive critiques. Stage inflation, which is my pet peeve. What do I have about? Oh, good. I'll just take a minute on my pet peeve. And Roger Walsh touched on this last night. Thinking that you're at a higher stage than you are is the shadow side of this. But I just want to point out the eight levels that are in the Aqua model, starting at, what are we starting at? Magenta, is that ultraviolet these days? The invisible one, and magenta, purple. Anyway, there's eight. And I'll call it magenta. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering it as magenta. We have 2 to 6 years of hominid history in the fossil record, depending on which school and which lineage and which research you're looking at. If you look at channeled material, the Urantia book claims that our hominid ancestry goes back 80 to 90 million years. That's all collapsed into one stage, which just means we've forgotten, we don't know, we don't have metrics for it. So we have, and that's equivalent to, if I just put one little pixel here on this screen, just keep that pixel in mind on the size of the screen as a timeline. Because if we go up through amber, you know, that's reaching back 6,000 years or so, orange coming out in the Enlightenment 400 some years ago, green in any meaningful sense about 200 years ago, emerging and then hitting critical mass only in the 20th century, and then in the 50s, 60s, exploding there. Then we have this integral thing that was sort of coming out in the 20th century and so on. So we have orange, green, teal, and turquoise. 4 stages on one pixel. Something's not right with that. So there's a tendency, our orange, our strive drive, to push. We all want to be turquoise, right? You know, and we're not. Okay, I only know 2 turquoise centers of gravity. And that's Ken Wilber and Don Beck. There are others here. I don't know them personally. They are here, and they operate out of that, and they're pushing into other areas. So teal is good. Okay, teal is really where we want to set the bar and be aware that I think where we are as a group. The politics of researcher simul tracking. I'm all for that, providing our psychographs, but the politics, privacy issues, information getting out. We're not so good at some things. We want our dirty laundry and our thing. The odds are it is a self-adaptive system anyway, and that people with the necessary height, altitude of lines will emerge anyway, and the psychographs will bear that out. However, they can always do the Darth Vader move and go to the dark side. And that's why repeated testing and updates are important. Just because you were a god emperor at age 47 doesn't mean at age 63 you're still functioning as well.
Just want to clarify, when you say teal, it's like the cognitive you were talking about?
Teal? Yeah. Well, just the altitude in general. So it's everything. Emotional, moral, you know, spiritual. Okay. Any of those 30 lines. So the general altitude. And where's my psychograph? Where is the psychograph as a tool? We need that. So to summarize, I hope I've outlined a way to apply Aqua 5 IMP to anything. You can take what I've done and stick it into your discipline. We can use large-scale collaborative test beds or smaller teams of scholar practitioners. The journey of 1,000 miles continues one step at a time. We're probably going to be with small teams for the immediate future until a large-scale collaborative can be done. We need to have a long-term vision, phase 1, 2, and 3 at the get-go, because that's how we're going to provide benefit and sell it and fund it and deliver it on time and on budget, as we used to say. And this is a radically new way to model lines, frontal, soul, and self. It's not been done, and I don't believe any other discussion this weekend has dealt with this whatsoever. And it didn't need to. This is, for what I'm looking at, this is where we can get into channeling. And to grok the turquoise relationships between these 4 basic elements of the theory, I just want to encourage all of us. This is something, if you're really serious about doing this, you need to master these 4 areas of the meta theory itself. It provides us a postmodern science of unprecedented scope. For questions, this young lady. There's a microphone, so you can speak into it so it'll be recorded. So please just come up and grab the mic. And
it's very interesting. I'm a fan of Abraham Hicks' work. Anybody else like Abraham?
Sure.
Abraham Hicks?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm always really trying to kind of figure out the relationship between that message and Wilber, which I think is really connected. So, saying that, one of the things that I think about when I see this idea of research is that from like an outside scientific perspective, some of the criticism that I'm hearing is that it assumes that it's true to begin with, I think. I think you come from a place of...
Well, that's why we call them hypotheses, right?
Yeah.
We set them up and then we test it to verify or falsify.
So,
no, if we're assuming it's true, that's not science.
Right.
Okay. And it's not Aqual 5 IMP either.
Right. So
we got our bases covered.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't know what it means. Why, I'm not sure why it's important to prove that it's true and to who it matters.
One of the benefits, I believe, is that by learning about channeling from an Aqual lens, which emphasizes right-hand it stuff, the database, and so on and so forth, is that it can teach people... I went through the point very quickly about human potentials. Everyone can learn to channel, but can we learn... You know, we dissociate every night when we fall asleep. The egoic construction is very loose in the dream self, and then it really tightens back up in waking state. How can we bring those elements into waking state for creativity, for health, for abundance, relationships, whatever we want? I think that's the benefit of doing the research. And to show the scientific connection, really it needs to be legitimized. It's been with us for 3,000 years. Historically it's been repressed with the rise of the Catholic Church. Any competition to the one God that we own, the causal God, any threat to that was labeled heresy, so it went underground. And then modernity occurred, and the three value spheres split, science, art, and morals. So it was further repressed and inappropriate, and it's still bubbling up all the time from the grassroots. It has never left us. So it needs to be legitimized. And as Ken pointed out to me, Orange is just never going to get it, so don't worry about that altitude. You can't explain it to them. You can't prove it to them because their paradigm doesn't allow for it. The eye of spirit is not part of their paradigm. The eye of mind rules there, and the eye of flesh in particular, the right-hand part. So another question? Please come up to the microphone and go ahead.
I'm interested in trying to validate the content in a scientific way. I used to read channeling material, try to compare it, and it didn't match too well. Some generalizations are inspiring, but many things didn't match. I also met Phyllis Schlemmer.
I don't know the name.
Channeler that she said that she worked with Andrija Puharic, the scientist worked with Yuri Geller.
Okay.
And that she provided scientific information on specific things like magnetic monopoles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could be a line of inquiry.
That's in our taxonomy. I mean, that's something that would pop up supposedly in these studies. Of course, we want to load the channelers with the best channelers we can find to really...
To find out if anything they say regarding science, practical matters, matches with upper right quadrant... findings.
That's why we have an integral post-metaphysical approach here. Okay, I didn't talk about that today, but that's the grounding element in our experience and our facts. Okay, and our experience is in the left hand is there, but just because a channeler says Atlantis, something to the sea, and you know where you have a lifetime in Brazil in the 3rd century BC, I can neither prove nor disprove that. It may be true. It may not be true. So we have to situate that. We include it. Remember, inclusion, non-exclusion. We include that. But with our multiple perspectives, we say, if I cannot prove or disprove it, I just leave it there. It's speculative. It's not fact. It's not accepted in the community. Okay, Sam, let's get you the microphone.
All right.
It's coming your way.
Okay.
Nope, you can stay where you want.
I have a question. Recently, I've been working with this guy from Tibet. He's like a Tibetan Lama, and I've been listening to some recordings of his, and he has some talks on transference of consciousness and other things. And what I've noticed is I'm kind of pretending to have conversations with him in my head, and I imagine what he might say. You know, he's obviously he's passed on, so... You know, I think it's all in my imagination. However, lately he's saying things that are slightly different from what I would imagine he might say. And I'm trying to figure out whether this is legitimate or not, and I'm hoping that maybe with what you're talking about, we could start to research that. However, I think maybe more the pertinent idea here is to include these sorts of phenomena. If we can't do anything with it, maybe still speculate on it, but don't discount it. I mean, I'm wondering if you might be able to clarify.
Sure. Where I would put your question, where I would put your question is in the stages, the beginning stage. How does it start? How does someone start doing this, right? How does someone advance, you know, just seedling, sapling, tree, stages of this? And it's possible you're in the seedling stage of something happening energetically with an exchange, an energetic exchange with, according to this model, that's a hypothesis that we've not proven scientifically yet, with a psychic line aspect, as we call it, that is communicating with you, through you, with you. Another question, please come up and take the microphone.
Wow, folks, that last question just brought to mind, you know, maybe you can figure out in my head whether I'm listening to the voice of truth or the voice of ego.
Only you can decide that for sure.
It almost sounds like the question you had it's just wonderful to see you trying to raise this into a scientific realm. You know, in 1988, I decided I had to, after avoiding channeling, I realized that I was heavy into Course in Miracles, which is channeled.
Yes.
One of the books that I really liked was the Seth books that seemed to talk better about metaphysics than anything else I'd read.
There are gold standards, by the way.
New Age thing, there were eight channelers, and I thought. And I listened to each one and to see whether they felt, you know, this is not scientific, whether they felt like they were truth or not. They seemed to all be valid with varying degrees of ego static in between.
This is where we can learn from the traditions, discernment. There is a lot, you know, the teachers there have their own metrics for discerning the eye of spirit as it starts to blossom and what we call inner senses as they start to activate and what is true, what is not true. And it's not an easy path. You're going to make mistakes. My wife Joanne in the back started channeling in April of 2007, and that was right before my final paper. I was going to do my final paper on science education, you know, my professional path and try to add there. But it was the universe telling me, you know, hello McFly, anybody home? She started doing that, and to be observing the initial stages that she's been going through for the last 15 months has been an eye-opener too. And discernment, learning the truth, has just been a roller coaster ride for her with her source named Rose. And I sit there as a concerned husband, as an observing phenomenologist, and all these other perspectives, and it's been a roller coaster ride for me. And luckily, we have a friend who's a double PhD, Joyce Kovelman from UCLA in psychology and neurology, who I've been able to say, is this a psychotic break? Is it a hysterical outbreak? Is there some pathological thing going on here? You must ask these questions. We have to have these metrics. And that's another reason to do science, to get these metrics there. So you can start to, you know, Sam here mentioned he's having some experiences. You've all had some. You wouldn't be here if you hadn't had some energetic experiences and you're curious about this topic and how that might work and how it might not work and how you proceed. What do you do? How do I get a job doing this? You know, where do I go? And our community at New World View is designed to do just that. There's some literature in the back. There's also a piece for a workshop we're doing with the Essence of Rose in October. And don't forget, the paper is back there. And unfortunately, time is up. So I will thank you very much. If you have questions, please come up and answer.